The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPont.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Anger is a universal emotion. It's neither good nor bad. It's just an emotion. But how we cope with anger, that can have consequences. We all feel annoyed, frustrated, outraged at time to time. But it doesn't have to lead to shouting or verbal, violent behavior. Anger is a lot more complex and nuanced than that. So is there someone in your life who does have an anger problem? How do you deal with that? Is that rageaholic? Is it you? Do you want to find another way to express that emotion? Have you ever been ordered to take an anger management class? How did that work out? We're talking about anger today, and we want to hear from you. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. This hour, we're joined by Bernard Golden. He's a psychologist, and author of several books, including Overcoming Destructive Anger, Strategies That Work, and Healthy Anger, Helping Children and Teens Overcome Their Anger. And with us in the studio is Richard Bauer. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist and certified anger resolution therapist at the Center for Personal and Relationship Growth here in San Antonio. It's great to have you both here. Thanks for being here today. Rick Bauer, is there more anger today now? Are people more angry now?
My perception is yes. I think a lot of what we're seeing is that society is allowing those boundaries to be pushed further and further back on what's acceptable with anger responses.
And Bernard Golden, what do you think?
I agree, especially from the use of the internet and the anonymity. People can lack a filter. They don't have to watch what they say. They don't have to look in the eye of the person they're talking to or expressing their anger toward.
Okay, so we're seeing greater demonstrations of anger. And you think people actually feel more angry, Rick?
I would say that what's getting triggered, the triggering mechanisms are starting to really become more and more and more powerful and more stronger because of, again, where society is going and what is really kind of digging deep into people's emotions. Anger really is just—it's an emotion, it's a healthy emotion if we allow those responses to stay proportional. It's what happens when we get those responses become out of proportion.
Bernard, what's healthy anger?
I see healthy anger as cultivating skills that really help us take a pause to reflect on what we're experiencing in our body and the anger about it, rather than just to react to the tension that goes with the anger. So it's all the skills that involve developing that ability to pause.
So we can use anger as a healthy tool to help us recognize injustice or something that's not fair. That's probably why evolution gave us anger. Rick, what do you think?
I think so. And to echo what Bernard was saying, I think not just the physiological, but also understanding what's happening neurologically in the brain. I spent a lot of time with clients getting to understand the different responses and the different parts of the brain they're getting involved. And for a lot of them, it's like an eye-opening experience. They never knew that what was happening and why they're becoming those. They're getting responses that they are, and those filters that are normally in place have a tendency to disappear when we get into that other part of the brain response.
So if you're saying that there's more, we're having these dramatic explosions of anger all the time, and we see them on social media too, there seems to be less tolerance in a way for anger. I know that when I was starting in the news business, it was not uncommon to have your boss screaming at you in the middle of the newsroom and all sorts of flare-ups and hot-tempered. And then people would say, we're just going to get it out and everybody's going to go on and do our jobs. But nowadays, if you did that, you would be drummed out of the industry. Bernard Golden, talk about where are we with tolerating this anger in today's society, in a professional environment?
Sure. I agree with what you just said, because years ago, I wouldn't get many referrals from my anger management classes from supervisors or physicians at hospitals or professors. And then in the last 8 to 10 years, I've had professors, MDs from hospitals, lawyers, much less tolerant. And part of the challenge is these people have been angry for many years, expressed it in their settings, but there are no consequences. So increasingly they are referred.
And Rick?
Absolutely. The same thing on what I'm noticing. But what also I'm noticing is how these supervisors and lawyers and are very much concerned on getting help for the people. And they will actually finance them and for many of them, and they'll provide the funding for them to get the help, which I thought was very interesting.
So uncontrollable anger can lead to unhealthy relationships. It can destroy relationships. It can ruin your career. It's also bad on your health. Bernard Golden, how does it impact your health?
For years, there have been many studies that correlate cardiac problems with ongoing hostility, also high blood pressure. I saw a study a while back where a large number of accidents, that people who've been involved in accidents at ER rooms, they recognized that there was a moment of anger that helped trigger or provided some background for those accidents. Physiologically, I saw some studies recently, too, that indicate can contribute to back pain. A sleep study, whereas people realize that anger interferes with sleep, increasingly I've seen studies that say lack of sleep increases the potential for anger arousal. So there is very much a strong physiological and physical component of anger.
What is the potential for change? People frequently think, this is who I am. If you don't like me if you can't take me at my worst, then you don't deserve me at my best. This is something I see all the time. But people don't have to live like this. I mean, it's totally adaptable. Is that something that the people can change, how they react? What are their triggers and how they deal with that, Rick?
My exposure to treatment, it kind of goes along a spectrum. The people that are actually addicted, the rageaholics, all the way down to the other end of the spectrum, which are what I call the rage abusers. And usually, once they're identified as the rageaholic, they're the kind of a person that once they learn the skills on how to de-escalate and how to refocus those anger situations, they will have to stay on that horse every day, just like an alcoholic. But the rage abusers, I've noticed, once they learn these new skills, they're able to have experience that peace in life a little bit easier and able to move on. And they've just kind of picked up those negative aspects in dealing with anger as they've done those walks through life.
And so, Bernard, have you seen people make changes about how they deal with anger?
I like that distinction between the abusers and the rageaholics, because the people who are the abusers more readily cultivate the skills to deal with anger. They're more readily in touch with their body when they can catch themselves at the beginning of the arousal. The rageaholics do have to make a much more mindful daily emphasis to attend to that skill, to attend to their body's reaction, to attend to what anger means for them. Anger is a habit, and so it does take a lot of time and commitment to change that. And sometimes it's very easy to say, I am who I am.
Wow, anger. You see people hulk out, you know, they suddenly something triggers them and they transform into a destructive force. And it's bad for them. It's bad for the people around them. It's bad for their families. It's bad for their careers. How can you turn that around? What are your experiences with anger? How do you manage it? How often do you really, really get mad? What triggers you? And what about your family and the people you work with, the people around you? Do they think you may have an anger problem? Call in. Let's talk about it. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Don't get mad. Get cool. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Are you addicted to anger? Are you a rageaholic? Or is there someone in your life who is? Is this someone that you have to really be careful around? You have to be careful, walk on eggshells, don't want to say the wrong thing at the wrong time, and boom, it's off to the races. That's not a good situation, particularly if it is a spouse. How do you manage that? And there are ways to you can de-escalate the situation and maybe get your spouse into some sort of therapy so they don't go to 100% anger immediately all the time. That's not a good thing. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. What do you want to know about anger? So let's talk about rageaholic. You brought up the term, Rick Bauer. You're with your certified anger resolution therapist at the Center for Personal and Relationship Growth here in San Antonio. Well, tell me more about what is a rageaholic and how are they addicted to being angry?
I think as in any addiction, you're going to see the addictive process kind of characteristics.
So they get a rush out of it.
They get the rush, but there's also what I call the compulsiveness for it. They need to get angry. They get the what I call self-stimulation. They will set themselves up in situations where they know that if they have a choice going to a movie or maybe going to a bar, knowing that full well they go to the bar, they're going to get into a fight. They'll go that direction. There's the also the sense of withdrawal symptoms when they try to get away from that. You'll see all of those different characteristics. Whereas
they start jonesing if they don't get angry. You know, they start feeling like, I've got to go put myself in a situation where I can get like that?
Oh, absolutely. I had one person I worked with who was a trucker, and we were going through the steps, and he laughed. He says, you really expect me to do this? He says, you don't understand. I go to a bar looking to get into a fight. Then what it is they're really kind of more addicted to that what we call the dopamine and serotonergic, that chemical flush. When you really get when you slam that door where you let that person, it feels good in that moment, and there's that release, and that's kind of what they're addicted to in reality, if you think about it. And then when they come down, they're feeling almost like on a high.
And Bernard Golden, he's the author of Overcoming Destructive Anger Strategies at Work. Do you see this too, people addicted to rage?
Sure. I think part of the addiction is that I see anger as a distraction as well as a reaction to deeper hurt, whether it's feelings of shame, inadequacy, mm-hmm. feelings of isolation. And so when we're angry, we focus attention on the person we're angry at or the situation. We focus attention outside of ourselves. And in a sense, that rescues us from experiencing those more intense, uncomfortable pains of those other feelings. Also, that when we're angry, I see anger as an outgrowth of an attempt at our own self-compassion. So it's easier to be angry for many people, especially the rageaholic, than to experience those pains. So we often do also adapt. I see anger as an identity for some people. It helps them distract themselves from the more anxiety-provoking questions of who do I want to be, how do I want to live my life, and they kind of surround themselves with that theme.
There's people who have a pattern of blowing up, and then they come back around with the apology tour, and somehow they think that's going to work. Is that a pattern that you have seen, Bernard Golden?
Yeah, I've often seen it as an attempt to then dismiss the other person's reaction and try to deal with their own sense of the shame. And sometimes there's the actual anger that they got angry. And so they really do want to not be the target of those other people's for pointing it out to them, the impact that other people experience.
Right. So
quickly move past it.
Richard Bauer, how do you help people make that adjustment with their mindset that anger is not something that can be just go on this apology and it'll be all okay and all will be forgiven. People will remember what you did.
I would say part of the first step is getting them to take the accountability for their actions. And kind of going along also with what Bernard was saying is you have to be careful to differentiate in the people that are kind of on the other side of the line, the abusers, and they get into this abusive cycle. And so part of what I have to, you know, assess is, are they just kind of being just the kind of person that's a rage abuser, or are they on the other side where they're actually doing this very power and control kind of situation, utilizing the anger to control the person? So it's a very fine line there. But for the person that just is kind of struggling with the anger, it's getting them to take the accountability. I kid about it when I say that most of my clients, when they come in, they've got a shotgun to their head because the person's saying, you need to go down and do this. And the person's saying, I don't think I have a problem. until they have a very, very kind of out of proportion anger experience. And now they kind of look in the mirror and go, I think I have a problem.
Right. So when we talk about the consequences and accountability for that, mm-hmm. frequently that comes from our judicial system, the law, telling people you assaulted someone or you did some road rage or you were domestic violence in the home. And now is this something that, you know, a judge will tell someone, go get this type of therapy, Richard, since you're a certified anger resolution therapist? Mm-hmm. They come from the courts, diversion therapy?
They do. We get it some for deferred judgment where they'll actually try to get ahead of the adjudication. We get them when it's a punishment. And for a while there, for a number of years, our clinic actually taught an anger management class. Again, one of the things we always encourage students in those classes is that a one-day class is going to give you some of the educational aspects, but probably if you really want to make change, you probably need to work one-on-one with one of our therapists to kind of get to what Bernard was saying, is those root causes. What's going on in the belief systems that says it's okay for me to behave this way, and what do I want it to look like?
Right, they're dealing with a lot of trauma from way
could
back.
Could be that. It could be they just learned the bad. Most of my clients have seen bad anger responses, and they've just kind of been, that's what's been modeled for them, and that's what all they know.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines. 210-614-8980. We're talking about anger. We really want to hear your stories. And Miguel has called in. Hi, Miguel. How are you? Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mr. I had a question regarding that. There's been some talk about the quote unquote the steps. I wanted to know the steps to resolve this. I wanted to know if you're specifically talking about a 12-step program like AA or NA, or if there's some other sort of thing, because it sounds like this is an addiction like anything else in my experience. Addiction is typically solved, well, maybe not solved, but I know AA does a lot of good work. So if y'all could speak to that for a minute, thank you, and I'll take my answer off here.
Miguel, thanks for calling in. So how do we mitigate, manage, control anger, channel it? So let's start off with Richard Bauer, and we'll go to Bernard after that.
The approach that I use, the steps that I use, is what's called a cognitive behavioral therapy approach, which initially starts with making that behavioral modification. And the first step is teaching those de-escalation tools, which initially involves pretty much getting them to stop in that moment. Well, actually, if it's before that, it's actually getting them to recognize those physiological cues, what's happening inside of their body, getting them to recognize on a scale, for instance, between 1 and 10, getting them to catch it at, say, a 2 or 3 or 4, saying, okay, this is not going well. And what I find in our culture is we don't do a good job of that. The term that I use is somatic awareness. The Greek word soma, S-O-M-A, means body. And we don't have as good in our culture awareness of that. And I find that it's very out of calibration for people and getting them to recognize where are they at. And so once that's in place and when they start to see themselves escalate, to start to put in place some of these steps. And the first step is to kind of get yourself to stop speaking. Because what they're finding is the more we talk and we're getting into that, what I call that lawyer mode when you're trying to defend yourself. And what they find actually stimulates that fight or flight system. The second step is to step away from that threat, walk away, because there's something in that conversation that's presenting itself as a threat. So just step away from it. And now, once those two steps are in place, that usually helps to start to mitigate and start to decrease some of that anger arousal. And there's some other steps that go along, but pretty much they kind of dovetail in with those first two steps.
And Bernard Golden, what do you think? What's a playbook that people can use to try to become less of a rageaholic?
Yeah, I think addressing the body's reactions is primary, the first step, actually. And sometimes people will say, take some deep breaths. And I had a woman say, well, that doesn't work. But I said, that's the first step. I then have them practice physical relaxation exercises and exercises that help them get more in touch with their body. And that's meant to be proactive so that at times when they are aroused, they become more sensitive. You can't just say, okay, I will remember to do that. It's a matter of, on an ongoing basis, being aware of one's body before that incident occurs. Another part is I say it's arousing compassion to help the person realize that the anger is a disguise and, like I said earlier, a distraction from those other feelings. And many times in either individual or the class setting, when I point out some of those other feelings, there's complete quiet because they do recognize that it is an escape from pain.
And can you help people reframe where they're, how they approach a situation, how they see things? Sometimes they may think the only reaction that they're allowed is to be angry and present themselves as this a person who's on the verge of a violent outburst. Richard?
Actually, that's a great point, because part of the major problem here is that framing that's going on in the person's perception of the moment, and getting the client to see that how they're, what we call cognitively framing it, is in every one of those thought processes is as a victim. This isn't fair. I shouldn't be treated this way. I don't deserve this. And when we perceive that threat, then our body's going to respond accordingly. So it's getting the person to kind of reframe the situation in a way that's not as threatening, going, you know what, that person probably doesn't even know who I am. It's probably just, they probably treat everybody like that today. And now it's less threatening. And so the brain can actually work for us. But definitely.
And so, and even laughing at the situation, like, this is comical, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that this is happening. I don't have to communicate. Is anger a form of communication, and what are they trying to communicate, Richard?
Absolutely. The anger is a tool, is what I want clients to understand. It's a good thing, but if we let it get out of proportion, then it's not so good. But it's also, Bernard said that it was a disguise, and I kind of use a similar analogy. I tell my clients on day one to get them to understand that anger is like an iceberg. And the tip of the iceberg that everybody can see is the anger. That's not telling me anything. Anger is actually what we call in our business a secondary emotion, and it's a mask. And what's masking is the 90% of what's under the water. So what are the real emotions? And I find for gentlemen, this is really, really hard for them to articulate, because our brains are wired a little differently. So we have to work a little harder at trying to articulate what our emotions are.
And so, Bernard, are people communicating, or they're thinking they're communicating how passionate they are about a certain person or situation, and they think this is the best way to achieve that?
They often think that it works because it does in the short term. Anger can intimidate, get other people to do what they want, control people. And I have to remind people of, well, that's the short term. Mm-hmm. The long term is you feel isolated. People will eventually pull away from you. And you don't get those other needs met. Anger is all about some key desires that are at bottom line feeling threatened, a desire for connection, for trust, respect. And so anger chases people away that ultimately leaves the person isolated and not able to have those needs met. But like I say, it works in the short term, and that's part of that addictive quality that adds to it.
And in the short term, they're able to bully people to get what they want. Is that what you're saying?
Right, exactly.
And that's not a way that you want to actually have a relationship or even a work with your peers.
And looking at the long-term impact and asking them, well, how's that working for you in a sense, whether it's in the workplace, peers, or in a sense, a more intimate relationship. Exactly.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're talking about anger. Do you think that your spouse, a family member, a friend has a problem with dealing with their anger? What does it look like? How does it present itself? What do you want to know about how you can help them? Call in and ask our experts as we talk about dealing with anger. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. When we come back from the break, we've got some callers on the board. We'll get you on the air right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about anger. Anger is an emotion. We all get angry at times to time, but, you know, how do you handle it? What are the triggers? And when you get angry, are you actually, you know, causing more problems than you're solving with your anger? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about anger and how to deal with it in a healthy manner. Let's go to the phone lines with Alisa. And Alisa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I am a researcher, and I have my PhD, and I work with victims of abuse. And I want to go back to one of the things that one of your guests was talking about when they said the difference between someone who is a rageaholic and someone who is an abuser. And that is a big misconception in society, in that nine times out of ten, abusers are choosing to be aggressive and violent specifically towards their partner and not towards, you know, their best friend or the bartender or their, you know, friend at the bar. But there are individuals who are rageaholics and do that. But abusers, that's one of the things that victims have the hardest time wrapping their head around, is that this is a choice that they are making to specifically be abusive and aggressive towards them and not other people as well.
So you're saying, help me understand this, Alisa, thank you for your call, that the people, the survivors of domestic violence, will see the aggressor as they had no choice. This is what they're doing. This is what they're like. And you want them to recognize, yes, the aggressor does have a choice, and they chose to be a rage abuser. Is that it?
Yes. And they're choosing to be abusive towards them, their partner, and they're not being abusive towards, you know, other people, the grocery store clerk or whoever else. They're targeting their anger towards their partner,
and they're using that too as a means of control of someone in their life.
Exactly. So it's about power and control, not the rageaholics. Now, there are rageaholics in our society, like you guys are talking about, but specifically with domestic violence victims, most of them think, oh, they need anger management. Well, it's not about their anger, because they're specifically making a conscious choice to only be angry with them.
Right.
So it's a conscious choice that they're making.
Okay. You bring us some great points, Alisa. Thank you so much for calling in. Let me go to both of our panelists. I'll start off with Richard Bauer. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist and certified anger resolution therapist at the Center for Personal and Relationship Growth here in San Antonio. So, Rick?
Yeah, I think Alisa brings up a very, very set of powerful points. And maybe in referencing the other end of the spectrum, maybe abuse may not be the right word for that. What we're kind of just trying to typify is the people that are just misusing the anger in situations, and they've got some bad habits they need to kind of relearn. That's kind of that one. But on the other end, she's absolutely correct. The rage abusers or the rageaholics are the ones that a lot of times are in those domestic violence situations and are utilizing a lot of that power and control. And that's the real issue. In fact, there's times I've had individuals come in and say, quote, they want anger management, but you're talking about much, much deeper issues that need to be addressed than just controlling anger, because that's what's really getting into the core of what's causing that anger. And she's absolutely correct on that.
And so Bernard Golden, he's a psychologist, author of several books, including Overcoming Destructive Anger, Strategies That Work. As these aggressors are using their rage issues as a license and allowing them to go explode, hulk out, and control people in their lives?
Well, I think of anger, as a feeling of threat, perceived threat, either to our physical well-being or emotional well-being. And so the rageaholic is so threatened that they then focus on power and control, and to manipulate people so that I have my anxieties, my feelings of threat assuaged. So it does become more focused on power, especially with domestic violence. And yeah, there is a choice. I've often asked, well, how come you could be angry in other settings, but it never escalates to that point, but when you're at home with your spouse or partner, that it does, and that the threat is clearly more powerful for them.
I wonder sometimes if people who rage out are frustrated because they don't know how else to express themselves. And if we gave them more tools to talk about their passion for someone and how hurt they are about certain circumstances, and, you know, they don't know anything else. They know, you know, on and off. And maybe if we gave them a better palette of how to talk about, you know, I am really hurting right now, and that it's not unmanly to talk about those types of things in that way, maybe we wouldn't be putting people in these awful situations. I don't know. Richard, am I crazy here?
No, and that's absolutely why a lot of what our anger therapy has to deal with is not just de-escalation, but it's trying to, when you think about it, in an anger situation, you have a complaint about something. And like Bernard said, there's a threat out there. Okay, so how do you address the threat? It doesn't do any good to just de-escalate and then sit there. If you have a threat, how am I going to communicate that threat or that complaint that I have in a way that's respectful? And so we spend a lot of time with clients teaching them and giving them tools on how to voice the complaint in a way that's respectful, to watch out for some of the pitfalls about communication. We spend a lot of time in those areas. What we also find, again, when you look at the difference between men and women, it's a lot of times harder for men to articulate, again, those emotions, and also because they're societalized to not want to talk about those emotions. And so I spend a lot of time with getting men to get and break out of those stereotypical frameworks and say, no, it's okay to share that you're sad or you're really hurt. Or feeling those feelings and getting there. And a lot of times the partners want them to say that. But absolutely, you have to put an emphasis in that area.
All right. Keep the channels of communication open. And Adam, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I used to deal with a lot of anger issues myself. I've come a long ways, but one area that I still see it coming out almost as if I am using it as a tool is with my children. And when it's almost like a learning tool that I use to emphasize how the level of importance it has while teaching them. And therefore I do use anger sometimes, and I'm hoping that you can either emphasize how bad that is for my kids and what it's doing to them, and also how I can attempt to do things better.
Okay. So Bernard Golden, one of your books is Healthy Anger, Helping Children and Teens Overcome Their Anger. And I guess they learn how to get angry by watching their parents. And how do you help them?
Children definitely model their anger on parents, siblings, extended family. And to give them the language of feelings. I often give a list of feelings to participants in my anger management classes as well as individual sessions. And lo and behold, most people have difficulty identifying their feelings. And to my understanding, it's to a great extent, we aren't allowed to, but also don't gain the knowledge and experience early on of labeling. When you're feeling hurt, what kind of hurt? Ignored, rejection, devalued, abandoned. And so the ability to label those feelings, research has said the more you're able to specifically label them, that itself is a way of controlling of anger. I want to address, too, the idea of expectations. As a parent, we may have a whole variety of expectations that we're not even aware of. A child at 4 or 5 seems very verbal, so we may treat them more as an adult, neglecting the emotion issues of a child, distractibility of a 4-year-old. So anger is a lot about expectations, including I have an expectation to have an hour of peace this evening. Well, that might be unrealistic for some when you have a child at 4 or 5, whatever.
Right. All right. Let's go to another caller. We got a lot of calls. The number is 210-614-8980. Doug. Hi, Doug. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me on. I'll try to make this short. My wife and I have been together since 17. We've been together for 31 years now, and I've dealt with anger issues. And the biggest thing that I find that we've really had to work at, or I've had to work at, and using a lot of the techniques that your panel is talking about, is the idea that my wife will deal with anxiety, and then she will poke me until I get angry. And then when I get angry, it tends to change her brain chemistry and pull her out of her anxiety. And I've really had to really work very hard in the idea that I have to find those physical cues and really either exit the situation or really work on communicating, unemotionally to what I need or what I'm trying to do for her in a way. But I want them to address the idea that most likely when things are going bad at home, you have the cycle that is spinning and it's not just one-sided, because it does sound a little one-sided from what I'm hearing so far.
Okay, Doug. So I'm not saying Doug is in a codependent relationship, but when people are in one, there might be, anger is a currency that is used in a relationship. Richard?
I agree. I think we've kind of looked a little bit at them. I'm just trying to kind of understand what the caller's trying to address from being one-sided, because I think he's right. One of the things when I work from a marital relationship standpoint, a lot of times what I see in conflicts, because anger is going to be probably one of those emotions pretty much present in conflicts, is what I call the dance. It's that cycle. And it is both. It's how two people are interacting, and they'll be going along great, having this wonderful interactive pattern, and all of a sudden somebody does something, somebody says something, and then all of a sudden there's what I call that shift moment, and all of a sudden you got that, okay, I'm in trouble. What happened? And rather than responding in a way that says, hey, what happened? Tell me what you're feeling there. And then the other person responds in kind of a negative way, which that person perceives that negative response, and they come back negative, and it just starts to make this huge cycle. And so part of this is working with couples, is getting them to recognize the secondary emotion, the anger. All that is covering up the mask for what's underneath. What was happening there? Well, I was feeling kind of disrespected. You know what? Wow, I didn't know that. Thank you for telling me that. How could I have done that differently? Now you've broken that whole cycle. But the caller, again, he's right. It's a cycle of how two people are responding.
And both people need to, if you need to counsel the couple, if it's because everyone needs to know what's happening in this situation.
Absolutely.
All right, we can take another break. We've got some more callers. We're going to get them on the board as we talk about anger and why this is an issue, why people are more angry than before. What does this mean as a society? What's the relationship between anger and depression and anxiety and trauma? The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What's your energy like? How do you project yourself? Do you come across as an angry person, easily triggered, and suddenly you're going to blow out the room with everything that you think and feel and not have room for everyone else? Or do you want to sort of calm things down and be more open and to have a level of empathy and compassion dealing with others? It's just not just you, but maybe as a society, are we all in that space? How would we benefit if we all were able to have open lines of communication, figure out ways to deal with some of the challenges of our society in ways that don't automatically trigger that immediate anger response? How do we get there, not just as individuals, but as a community? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We're talking about anger. And here's Tom. Tom, thanks for calling in. This is The Source, and you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say, as a person who deals with depression and a few issues around that, that I have always found when I start getting angry at people, and if it happens more than once or something, I realize that there's something wrong with my medication. One medication or another either stopped working, or maybe I need an increase or whatever. It is, but that's a telltale sign to me that that some medication is not working.
Tom, thanks for the call. Bernard Golden, you're a psychologist. What about meds?
Meds can be helpful, and especially for depression and anxiety. And it is important to note the connection with depression and anger. So many individuals might show anger and is covering up or masking, as we talked about earlier, that depression. And so being depressed, we're brittle, we're pessimistic, optimistic, which can fuel the anger in very many ways, just like anxiety can. And I often say that when I started this field, I thought, well, no one needs to be on meds. But over time, I realized there are people who may be so anxious that they can't make use of the psychological strategies until that anxiety is reduced. And similarly, depression creates is physical as well as emotional, and people may need to be on meds for a while until they can develop those psychological strategies to deal with challenges in life.
But then there are other meds that people use. They self-medicate using tobacco, nicotine, alcohol, and even food. Richard Bauer, do you see a lot of that?
Oh, absolutely. And it's getting, again, the client to recognize what are healthier ways to deal with the anger. Again, maybe working out at the gym, getting them to use the natural endorphins from working out. Also, getting them to recognize how the alcohol use might be actually being detrimental. But again, getting them to make that choice and getting them to see that some of these are not really helping, they're actually hurting.
Let's go to Heidi. Heidi is called in. Hey, Heidi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am just getting out of an abusive relationship, and it sounds exactly like what I've dealt with. And in doing a lot of research, it sounds so much like narcissistic personality disorder, and I wondered if there was any
connection there?
Not similarities, but it sounds like the same disorder.
Wow, that's a great point. So I'm going to check that out. So Bernard Golden, narcissism, is there a connection between that and anger?
Anger could be one of the symptoms of a variety of mental health disorders, and that's definitely narcissistic disorder, bipolar disorder. As I was saying, depression can lead to anger, can foster anger. So there are, it definitely can be a part of narcissistic disorder, but it also is an accompanying symptom of some others as well. And I always suggest that the disorder be treated primarily or while the anger management is going on, rather than addressing primarily the anger management issues.
But if a person is raging and they hulk out in the room, and they aren't they essentially saying that my state is more important than your state? I'm only concerned about being able to express myself. Is that narcissism, Richard? You're probably not.
No, that's from the description of the narcissistic personality disorder. That's kind of something totally different. But again, I think what's happening is the person's focusing inward on what they're not getting in that moment. Again, the feeling of this isn't fair. I shouldn't be treated this way. And that needs to be addressed. But I think, like I said, Bernard hit the nail on the head. But there's so many different varied personality disorders that can fall into that those need to be treated along with the anger management.
And Antonio, thanks for calling in. Antonio, you're on the air.
I guess my question was, if there's a place for anger, it's a basic human emotion. I was wondering why it's always just suppressed, or is there a healthy place for anger?
All right, Antonio, good call. And so, Bernard Golden?
Definitely. Anger is very motivating in a variety of ways, and the idea is to focus on how it can be channeled effectively and constructively. There's a difference between acting out or acting on the anger in terms of showing it, demonstrating it, versus talking about, I'm really angry about that, and partly because I felt ignored. I felt you just betrayed me. So actually talking about the anger, yes, you might have a raised voice, but it's very different than acting it out destructively.
And so, Richard, what does a healthy, angry response look like?
I would say, again, using my scale 1 to 10, anything – I use 5 as a cutoff. Anything less than 5, which is – anything over 5 is going to be a thing that's hurtful, damaging, disrespectful. Those are the behaviors that are going to be not – that won't be there. It's one thing to be able to get to the situation and say you need to be respectful. But one of the things I also tell people, you can be assertive. And there's a fine line between being assertive and being out of proportion. So you've got to measure that. But it's saying, hey, this really hurt. This was really disrespectful. And it's kind of teaching that person to say, hey, this is how you can raise this in an assertive way. You don't have to be a church mouse about this, but it's saying, hey – we have to feel the kind of sense of empowerment. But again, if that anger gets to a point, there's a great quote by an old Scottish poet I like to cite from the 18th century, Robert Burns. He says, do you know that people can't hear what you're saying because of how loud you're saying it? And the message there is that, hey, when you start getting that volume up, you've just lost the audience. And if you lost the audience, you lost the chance to maybe get resolution on your complaint.
Here's Dorothy. And Dorothy, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to point out that sometimes when we think we're angry at someone else, we're really upset with ourselves. I learned that years ago before the internet and GPS and all that. I'd made an appointment somewhere I'd not ever been before, and I forgot I had a policy in place. I just forgot to use it. I forgot to say, well, let me read these directions you gave me back to you and see if I got it right. And I forgot to do that, and I couldn't find the place. And I was driving around, and finally, I said, drat that person, they didn't give me the right directions. And I went another couple of blocks around and around, and I realized what I'd done. And I pulled over and thought, well, if I'd remembered my policy and said, let me read these directions back to you and make sure I got it right, this wouldn't have happened. So I'm not really angry at that person. I'm angry at me. And it really helped my life, that realization.
Dorothy, so glad you called in. And so being angry or even frustrated at yourself, Bernard Golden, and that sometimes becomes the trigger?
That can often trigger the anger in the sense that what we don't like about ourselves or don't like to see ourselves as evidencing, we then target someone else for those very attributes, those very specific ways that they're responding. It's easier, again, to distract ourselves from feeling negative feelings about ourselves, especially maybe shame about making a mistake, that we're only human, and that involves pausing and reflecting on that.
Sometimes I get, well, not sometimes, frequently I get angry at my computer, and I'm getting mad at an inanimate object, doesn't work fast enough or does all these crazy things. Is that negative? I mean, can I get mad at an inanimate object, Richard?
Well, I think you can pretty much get mad at anything.
Is that negative? Should I figure out another way of dealing with that?
Oh, absolutely. And that's, again, kind of what we work with in anger management, is recognizing that the real gist of the anger response is a sense of trying to restore control. But there are some situations that's getting people to realize that you just don't have any control over. There are some things in this world you can control. There's some you can't. When you're in traffic and it's not moving, you don't have any input on that. So you've got to learn. And getting them to realize when they don't have input in a situation is teaching them to be able to say, to be able to let that go and say, you know what? And, of course, this goes back to how you kind of, that cognitive reframing in the brain, saying, okay, I'm going to be late. I'll deal with it. It's no big deal.
But as a society, should we be thinking about anger in a wider way and about how we – obviously, this is a widespread problem, can cause catastrophic impact. There are people who become victims of anger, whether they be children or spouses or even people on the street, you know, who are attacked at times. Do we need to be talking about anger in broader terms so that many of us can come up with healthier responses, Bernard Golden?
Yes, I think we ignore that, in a sense, the counterbalance to anger is compassion and empathy. And I say not just for others, but for ourselves. I mentioned the idea that if we recognize our humanity, that we make mistakes. We have a variety of feelings, including anger, shame, feelings of inadequacy, feeling less than. And developing that kind of compassion for ourselves enables us to become empathic and compassionate with others as well. And we need to have this conversation on a larger scale.
Richard, where do you think we ought to be talking about anger as a society?
Oh, absolutely. In the schools, in the home. My wife and I, she's another therapist at our firm.
In our jails?
Absolutely.
We ought to be talking about how we can be healthy. Anger can be part of our society.
And start them right at young. And the family's teaching them how to be emotionally comfortable or comfortable with their emotions, sharing it.
All right. Richard Bauer, he's a licensed marriage and family therapist at the Center for Personal Relationship Growth here in San Antonio. Bernard Golden is the author of many books, a psychologist. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.